So first we're going to start with some front end fun. And you know, when I got Matt to let me help him with the site, I wanted to have some fun building, because a lot of work sometimes gets to be drudgery, and this just sounded like a lot of fun. And Matt was pretty busy, and he couldn't like keep me from doing stuff that I wanted to do. So one of the things that I did that I thought was fun and just waited for Matt to say no, and he never did, was how I handled when we got the comp. So we had a designer, and I really like working with her. She was great. And one thing that made me happy when she sent us the comps was that it was in PDF format. So I usually don't like it when I get comps from a designer that are a bunch of like Photoshop files or just PNGs or something. I prefer to get the actual artwork. So we got a PDF. And so actually I was kind of happy about that, because I hatched an evil plan. And I thought, why don't we try using SVG for this? So some benefits, SVG starts with the word scalable. What that means is that it's going to scale well to Retina browsers, to small browsers, to really big screens. And so because we had artwork that looks like that, right, this kind of stuff, she sent this over, and I was like, that's going to be kind of a pain if I have to have PNGs, or if I have, even if I'm doing like, you know, shapes and CSS. And I actually started out doing just CSS and rounded corners and border radius and all that, and it worked, but I didn't like it. I wanted to actually just use the artwork, because I thought she would probably send changes over time. So scalable is a good thing. Scriptable is pretty cool. So who here's actually like built production stuff using SVG? Anybody? Nobody. Okay. It's super fun. I actually have been a total SVG fan for a while, and I haven't had an excuse to use it on a site, so this was really cool for this. So scriptable.
For you to keep the audience.
That's for me to keep, thank you. So scriptable, meaning that you can use JavaScript, you can get element, you can set properties, you can read properties, you can do all kinds of cool stuff with that. It is stylable. I don't think that's a word, but I'm using it anyways. Meaning that you can style it using CSS. So just kind of standard, it's a DOM, it's it's an XML file with elements, and you can just do standard CSS styling on it. And finally, the designer developer workflow is pretty cool, meaning that the designer could send us stuff, we could make modifications, send it back and forth. So it's a much better language for communicating back and forth between design and developer than just kind of sending back images or red lines or that kind of thing. So this is the overall kind of workflow that I use. So I said, oh, I've got a few hours. And honestly, on this site, Matt and I are really busy with a lot of other things. And this was something where we're like, hey, I've got 2 hours. I can get some work done on this. Oh, now I got a meeting. Shoot, I'm done, you know? And so this was something where I was like, hey, I think I can give this a shot. So step one was I opened the PDF in Inkscape. So a little known fact is that PDFs are actually, you kind of use SVG under the hood, right? So if I go, who here uses Inkscape? Does anyone know about Inkscape? It's pretty cool, right? So Inkscape is an open source vector graphic editor. It's pretty lightweight. One thing that I like about it is that it uses SVG just like as a native format. So here I can go in, I can say open, and I think it's on my desktop. And so I've got, there it is. I think it's Howstash. So, and then it's gonna say this is a multiple page PDF. How do you wanna open it? Which page do you wanna open? So I do that, and then I can go in and I can select things. So I had this entire page mocked up, and I go in and I grab the elements and start deleting them, and I just grab sections that I wanted, right? So here's this thing, and I'll zoom in here. So this is saying, which page do you want? So I don't want page one here. You'll have to trust me that I'm doing this. So I'm clicking through. This is the page that I wanted. I want to grab this chart, for instance. So I'll say, yep, grab that. So it's going to import that, and then I can just select elements and, you know, go to town. So I went in. I took advantage of my touch screen, which I love. Okay, so then I can just go in here and I can say, you know, copy, paste it to a new document, you know, just start doing stuff with it, right? So anyhow, that's the kind of general idea. I definitely don't have time to go into, you know, advanced vector graphics stuff, but this is really something you can just kind of go and plunk around with and get a lot done pretty quickly. So that was step one. So I grabbed that, and then actually you can go in and you can view this stuff as XML. So you can go somewhere in here, XML editor. So this is the actual XML, and if I go in and start changing the text and stuff, it's interactive. So the same as you'd use developer tools, same kind of thing. All right, so now I've got an XML document, right? And so that was kind of the overall workflow. Once I had that, then I could start doing cool stuff. So one thing that came along after we kind of made the gamble of I started using SVG and Matt didn't stop me. So I was like, okay, this seems to be working, right? Well, then we came up with something where we said, you know what? It's cool to measure how long the mustaches are, but it's also fun to measure or to actually slap a fake mustache on people. And that ended up, like Matt said earlier, being kind of one of the favorite features of the site. The problem was, if you always slap a dark mustache on a light on a dark face, you don't see it. You need some contrast, right, to see it. So what we wanted to do was have some random colors. So we picked a few different colors that made sense, and then we wanted to actually be able to just pick one randomly. So let's see if I've got this running. So this is the actual site. Here in the site, we've got just a bunch of SVG files, and I'll go to those in a second. But so now if I go to images, if I got it right, okay, so scalable, remember? So there it is, so now if I hit F5, so it's cycling through the colors. It's not, you know, I could zoom in, but okay, so how did we do that? Well, remember I said it was scriptable. So I actually went in for this, and in this SVG file, down at the very end, so I'm gonna move this off to the side. I added a script reference, and I said xlink actuate onload. So basically I added an onload handler, okay? And that is to scripts svg random color.js, which is just a file I threw in. And that is here. So here I've just got several random colors. Well, several colors that we pick that we like. I just do a simple JavaScript pick a random number. And then with this, I said get every path. And so there's some different kind of shapes that you can use, circles, squares, et cetera. These are all paths. So I said select all paths. And this is standard like document.getElementsByTagName. Like, so if you're used to using JavaScript and manipulating the DOM, it's the same stuff, right? And then I just iterated it and set the color. And then I also set a stroke width for the border. So that's it. So just a few lines of code. So that was pretty fun. And then here's something we actually didn't implement, but I prototyped it out. And the idea here was we had a chart and we wanted to see the average mustache length over the course of the month. And so here I was looking at doing this using D3. So I wanted to show you some of the code for that. This is actually, I just used CodePen for this. So this code on the left, this is HTML with embedded SVG. And then the CSS you can see is just like a couple of lines, it's just a container. I set the container style. And then on the right side here, I've got my JavaScript and I've got my data just in JSON format. So keep an eye on this, and I'm gonna change the data here. So instead of 70, I'm gonna make that 20. Right, so it drops down. Now make it 90, So that's really all there is to it. So this, I don't have time to go into it, but this is like 40 lines of JavaScript code. It's really pretty simple. And you can search around for D3 charting with SVG. This code here, that's the entire SVG for that whole chart. And it is in a tiny little window, so it looks like a lot. But it's actually, if you open it in a normal editor, it's nothing, right? So it's pretty darn small. And some of the gotchas we ran into with SVG, there's some different ways you can include it in a page. So you can use an image tag. You can set image source equals whatever.svg. If you do that, it's very sandboxed. So meaning it's you can't script it. Anything that you do is very kind of tied down. And the reason is because you want to be able to reference someone else's SVG image out on the web without worrying that their scripts are going to do something bad, right? So it really is pretty sandboxed. With an object, you can do a bit more, but you run into problems with different browsers doing things differently. So for instance, on Chrome, it loads it asynchronously. So we had JavaScript code, and it would say, it would try and set things on the chart, but the chart wasn't loaded yet. So, you know, it wasn't an object and all that kind of problem. So then, but IE and Edge, it worked fine because it loaded synchronously and it always, I could go in and immediately start scripting it. The weird thing that I ran into is that I couldn't, I had to write a callback handler, but the callback handler wouldn't work in IE because IE loaded it immediately, so the callback never fired. So I ended up writing some semi-hacky code in there that, like, I don't even know if I want to show it. But basically, it was saying, like, try and immediately access the document object. If it doesn't exist, then call a callback. And then for either of those two things, execute a separate function, and that separate function knew that the object was loaded and started scripting it. If that sounds like a headache, it totally was, which is why we ended up moving a lot of it to just inline. So you'll actually see in our view, so if I look at the view here, we actually have, this is all SVG just right in the page. Right, so here we have, you know, div, p tag, SVG, and then right on from that, that's our chart. So that's, you know, very, very quick overview of using SVG, but I was pretty happily surprised with how it worked out. And it did allow us for some of those things, like I said, being able to script it, being able to change things around and work on the fly. One other thing we were able to do with it is globalize it. So this chart, if you go out to mymustache.net is actually, how many languages? I think we just support like
three languages.
Yeah. But technically we can support, you know, any number of languages. It's just done using resource files. So this stuff down here at the bottom, I just like zooming in because I can, it's scalable, so neat. So all this stuff like LAMO, getting there, you, everyone else, those are all just text elements in the SVG. And so we write HTML, which is pretty simple. We write out HTML hidden form fields using resources. So the standard ASP.NET globalization stuff just says, OK, here's all your list of stuff. And then our script goes through and iterates them. Definitely cleaner, you know, nicer, fancier ways you could do this. But this definitely worked. And like I said, we could have scaled to any number of languages as we wanted to go. So that was another nice feature of, you know, going through and using SVG that we were able to support. With that, I'm going to turn over to Matt. He's going to tell about something that went wrong. So
I like to talk about stuff that went wrong.
Yes.
Since I break. So,
Nope. Oh, hello? Anyway, so if you guys did globalization of sites before, you probably use this, right? You go to your web config and you put the coacher, UI coacher automatic, right? And then based on the coacher that comes from your browser, ASP.NET automatically selects the right resources file. And we had Chinese, we had English, and I did it in the Brazilian Portuguese just for fun, because I happen to know that. And in my first attempt of doing that, in my defense, I was tired, but I put auto on both settings, on coacher and UI coacher. What happens there is that this one has to do with the UI, right? It has to do with picking the right resources file and everything else. This one messes with everything else. It messes with your serialization of your data types, for example. So a number that has decimal points, dot becomes comma, right, when it becomes a string. So one of the things that My Mustache does, it's whenever you analyze an image, we take the JSON metadata out of it, and we send to Event Hubs, and I'll show this later. And from Event Hubs, we go to Stream Analytics, and then we put aggregate all of that into a big data file. And that's how I can tell, for example, things like how many users have used the site. So if I go here and see this total number there, that number goes into this big pipe with, for example, latitude and longitude and stuff like that. I aggregate everything, and then I come up with this number. In the moment that switched to Portuguese, then the latitude and number started to go with commas, right? And that went to Event Hubs and started to aggregate there and went to the big file. And then all the sites started to pick up that number that now was broken in English. And then suddenly, all the sites in other languages, they started to kind of crash. And we got a big, like, right? HTTP 500 everywhere. And that's where, when you do globalization, you have to think, do you just want to change the UI, which is easier, and leave everything else in English, because then numbers, date formats, everything else are always the same? Or do you want to change everything, including what happens in the server-side code? Because that's why these two settings are separate, right? And that's a thing you have to keep in mind. Now, the other interesting thing about what we've done was the science behind the mustaches, how to put the mustaches in the right places. And that sounds like when you see the site doing it, right? I showed you before, especially when you get photos on different angles. For example, let's say, I don't know, this guy here, right? We need to find where his mouth is, the angle of the mouth, and try to place the mustache right there in the right place with the right angle. And doing that is not as easy as it looks. And it was a funny thing, because it was a moment where John and I were both tired, and we were both like, oh my God, I don't know how to do this. And John was in San Diego, and I was in Redmond, and we connected via link, and I shared my monitor. And we started kind of peer programming that. And the way we went around it, like, this is what the face API returns, right? When I analyze a face, it tells me the face is here in the photo, and these are all the points I know about the face, the nose, right, the mouth, eyes, right?
It's really pretty cool, the amount of information it gives you. Like, we're starting to look through, and we're like, how do you fit a mustache on,
yeah,
right? And we're like, well, it goes kind of between here and here, and you can get a pretty good idea of the width.
Right.
You know, and you can start building it out.
But the problem is, the faces are never like this. They're like this, right? And a little bit like that, or like this, right? So how do we do that? So the first thing is, we need to find the right angle of the mouth. And we discussed, like, there are the things, the thing tells us the position of the head, but we felt like the head is not what you want. It's kind of the mouth. It's where the mouth is.
Yeah.
And John, and I still don't believe you did, but John, right away, out of his memory, he goes, oh, yeah, there's a formula for that. You do like this, and you draw, and there's a 0.1, 0.2, you draw this, and there's some formula here, and he actually typed it.
Has anyone ever used arctangents, like, actually? I was so happy. I was like, I finally used arctangents.
I was like, are you seriously kidding me that I remember this by heart? All right, whatever you say. So he did that, right? He calculated the angle, and we rotated the mustache. and you try out and work it like this.
Well, you...
And then I was like, and that was my participation, right? I was like, I don't think that's degrees. I think that's radians.
Yeah.
And like we changed that, and the radians, and actually in the style sheet, you find out that you can put radians and it works, right? You rotate that
cool.
with style sheet.
So this is an SVG image, and we just dropped it on top. And so we could rotate, what he's saying is we're using the CSS transform to just rotate it.
Yeah, so you rotated it. And it was fine, but in the wrong place.
Yeah,
right.
It's like a unibrow.
Right.
Gone horribly wrong.
So then we have to figure, well, it should be between these points. And we kind of move it. So we find the difference between those two points and say, let's put it right in the middle. And that wasn't easy as well, because some mustaches, they are supposed to be here. Others, they kind of cover all the way here. So for each mustache type, we had to add a little Y
fudge
variable.
Factors.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we kind of, that one has to be a little bit here. That one has to be a little bit here so it fits. And then the other problem is the faces are in different sizes in the image,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
So what we did there, I think at the end of the day, we look at the size of the mouth, and I think we multiply by a factor or something to make it a little bit larger than the mouth, right?
Yeah.
And then place it. And that's how you put a mustache in the face.
So you can use this in your production code today. Go out and start putting
right.
mustaches everywhere. People
That's
love
the,
it.
By far the most important lesson we learned here today. Is going to be using that. Right? I think it was pretty cool. Yeah. I mentioned application sites. And just so you can see what I was talking about, here's the application sites of that site. And I can do funny things. Like I can select a specific time frame. I can look at page load times. I can look at errors. For example, if I look at fault requests, I can see where the errors happen more often. For example, we have quite a few errors. When I look at the error types, most of them happen here. That's actually new. I think that's the code that Elliot just updated. I was expecting to see something else. So I can see if it's JavaScript, if server-side, it does both things. When you have any application with a relatively large number of users, this is the most important thing ever for you, because it's going to tell you exactly on that particular subgroup of your users using that particular browser in that particular scenario, that's when the problem happens. So sometimes your users don't even know that errors is happening, but you know there's something affecting the site and everything else, and that's how you go find it. Application sites is really, really useful for finding out these problems. That's another interesting thing. So I mentioned privacy. At Microsoft, if I build a site like this and I collect your personal information, your address, your photos, anything like that, I need to ask for permission first, right? I need to say
you. Unless you have Windows 10.
Yeah. As even with Windows 10, we are not allowed to use that. So there are rules around, and in every country that's different. China has a bunch of laws, European Union has a bunch of laws. And I can't, for example, let's say you say, hey, Microsoft, I'm creating my account on Outlook, and I do not authorize you to call me to pre-sell Office, right? I don't want you to use. And that goes to a list. We have a big database at Microsoft that says these are the customers that say that's okay, we can call them. These, don't touch them because they say no, right? So we have to respect that. And because in this particular case, we wanted to show statistics about regions. So for example, I want to show which country has the larger mustache, right? I wanted to prove Mexicans have larger, actually they don't, but I wanted to prove they had. But then it comes back to this problem. I want to collect this location data, but I'm not allowed to do that. And then discussing with the legal guys, they explain, well, it depends on how precise the location is. Like if I can narrow down your street, that's a problem. But if I can say it's around Portugal somewhere, that's not so much of a problem, because there's nothing there that identifies you. And that's the big thing. I cannot record information that identifies who you are. And so what we did there, and we discussed about different ways of doing this, like for example, well, maybe there's an area that we can round the number for that area. And we decided to take the IP address instead and take the last number of the IP address and say that's zero. So we kind of know your IP address, but we don't really know that. And that's the information we require, because that's not precise enough to tell me anything. And then we run this against a geolocation table to then collect where this access is coming from. And then we started building some statistics with it. And we tried to find a cool name for it, so we call it Stashistics. And that's why we don't work in comedy, because we're not funny at all. But so what we build is first, let me show you the architecture of what's behind, so you get an idea of how this works. This is another site I've built called Azure Lens. And I built this to kind of describe architecture of things that are on Azure using Azure and using TypeScript. This is just TypeScript. So these sites, they use a very similar architecture. It's the same one we use for howold.net, for example. And basically, we have a website that takes your photo, and then it calls the Project Oxford, right? Say, hey, I got this photo here. That's Project Oxford right there. And then from Project Oxford, you get a JSON payload saying, okay, I found a photo, it seems to be a male, 23 years old, whatever, I see the eyes here, and blah, blah, blah. I get a bunch of data, metadata. And then I get this metadata and I put it on Event Hubs. And the cool thing about Event Hubs is it's built for large number of messages. I can send millions and millions of messages per second, and the thing can just pipe that, and it's not going to slow down my website because of that. So for every face analyzed, we just send this data to Event Hubs. And from Event Hubs, we go to Stream Analytics. And Stream Analytics, it's like a SQL interface, but instead of having a database, you have data moving on the pipe. So the fun thing about Stream Analytics is that you can aggregate data in real time. So this is an example of a query in Stream Analytics. You can really run select, group by, where, from, right? Get all this data we are collecting from the JSON file and do calculations. For example, I can aggregate by minute or by a time window, calculate averages, sums, totals, and take that total, and then I can save it in different places. I can, for example, save it in Power BI. So I can connect the real-time data into Power BI and have a real-time report, or Hadoop, or even custom build like we did here. We take disaggregated data, we save on Event Hubs again, and then we read it from a website. And then from the website, we keep streaming this data in real time using Signalr. You guys saw a presentation on Signalr early today. And that's what we did here. We built this thing called Stashistics. And that's a website using Signalr. So the web server is reading this data in real time and sending via Signalr to the client. So you're always updating. So I can see here, this is the average length of mustaches all over the world in real time, right? So you can see, for example, Asia seems to be smaller than everybody else, right? There are places in Europe where it gets a little bit higher than others, right? And then, for example, there is a checkbox in the site that says donate to science. You can say, I'm donating my photo for Microsoft to improve their machine learning. Like, you have this option. What's the percentage of people who say, yes, Microsoft, I let you do that? So I can change my filter, and in real time, I'm now grabbing this data. So the higher bars are the ones where the higher percentage of people say yes, and the lower bars are where less people say yes. So this is JavaScript. This planet is rendered. We're using Bing Maps images with a JavaScript library called, I think its name is Cesium. It's an open source JavaScript library. And then we, from Signalr, we keep receiving this data and rendering these bars in real time, right? So it's pretty cool. And I can use Power BI as well, so I can see this data in real time in Power BI. That's how we take this data from the site. So here, for example, there is a view from Power BI. I won't open in Power BI, but I wanted to show the countries where we got longer mustaches, right? And I was hoping I would prove Mexicans have higher mustaches, but actually Brazil has higher than Mexicans. So yeah, the joke is on me there. But there is Ghana, Angola, but of course, like, this could be countries where we had just very few photos, and statistically there's just it's not really accurate. It could be like there's also men and women, so maybe a country there were more women playing with this rather than men, so it's hard to tell from just these which countries have longer mustaches. But it shows how fun it is to work with real-time data on this platform. So Stringalytics, if you go to, let me just open this quickly here. So Stringalytics, it's a really simple tool where you connect to a data input, a data output, and then you run a query. And then you can say aggregate data for the last minute. So for example, another test we did with how old was showing those same bars, but just for the last minute of photo submission. So average age of the world. So you can see the bars going up and down really fast as you rotate the planet. I don't have that sample anymore. I think I accidentally deleted that, sorry. But if I go to Stringalytics, here is an example of that. I have input, and the input in this case is just a blob storage where all my raw data is there in JSON. I have a query, which is where I tell, grab this data and massage this data and do whatever I want. So you're basically running a query against a JSON file here, right? So it's not just like a table. You have multiple columns. For example, array element, dot array value, dot face ID, dots, maybe a tree of things. And then we save that into a output. In this case, the output could be Event Hub, it could be Power BI, it could be anything. So you're running a query in real time. The data comes in, it keeps running, and then it keeps spitting data. So it's super useful for big data scenarios, real-time analytics. It's a very fun way of building reporting. And I think that was pretty much that. Other than that, definitely go play with Project Oxford. If you have any questions, reach out to us, because by now we know quite a bit about it. And if you have any questions, please ask.